Easter's just a couple weeks away, hard to believe. And it's a story of the miracle of the resurrection of our way-shower, Jesus. Our way-shower, Jesus, who by his teachings and his miracles and his actions taught us about who we are and that power that's within us. Jesus' whole purpose for humankind is summed up in a beautiful mystical poem by Robert Browning, and there's a couple lines from that poem, Paracelsus, and it goes like this. There is an inmost center in us all where truth abides in fullness, and to know consists in opening out a way where the imprisoned splendor may escape. I love that. All that good stuff is inside and just looking for a way to come out of us. Jesus' mission was about waking us up to our true selves, to our true power, really to our magnificent selves. How many of you got up this morning, looked in the mirror and said, oh, I'm magnificent? Oh, well, of course, Reverend Mike. I mean, yes. I know. At any rate, once upon a time, years and years, early days, I was a newbie at all the spiritual stuff. And I was just discovering Unity and its teachings. And I had just started going to a Unity Center and I took a couple classes. And I was curious. I wasn't sure about what I was curious about. And I was hungry, and I wasn't sure what I was hungry about, for something. And so I had just gone through a really rough time in my life. You know how those are real character building. They say what doesn't, you know, kill you will, you know, make you stronger. Well, I must be really strong. But I had been critically ill for many years, and my marriage had fallen apart, and a future career that I had worked for and gone to school for and sacrificed for was no longer possible for me. So I was, you know, wandering. And so, like a lot of us, when everything falls apart, we go to church looking for answers, looking for meaning. What does it all mean? What is it all about? See, I'm no different. You know, just been there, done that. And after taking some classes locally, I made a leap and I decided I'm going to go down to Unity Village because I'd heard all these wonderful things about Unity Village. And I'm going to take some courses down there with these spectacular teachers. And I was going to go down to headquarters. And back then, when you went down for classes, it was a 2-week commitment, so that weren't any vacation you might have had. So I got down there a couple days early, and as is typical with me, I checked in and I went exploring. I was wandering around the campus, checking it out. And I still wasn't really quite sure why I was there, other than I felt led to be there. And I'm wandering around, and to those of you who've been to the village, I mean, how beautiful it is. There's gardens, and there's chapels, you know, and there's little places where you can stop and sit and meditate, and there are the fountains. And I stopped in an area that was open. It was a building, and when I walked in, I realized it was the student lounge back then. It had a fireplace and piano, the kind of loungy stuff, you know, nice comfy chairs. And there on the coffee table, in front of a very comfy sofa, was a very large, and I'm not kidding you, the book was like about this big. It was covered in white leather, had gold printing on it, said the Holy Bible. Now, I wasn't much of a Bible reader. I knew a few stories, but they kind of had no context. It didn't really mean anything to me. Actually, I never read the Bible, very honestly. And I wasn't one of those people who could about verses and tell you chapter and verse. So I sat down. What the heck, I'm here at Unity Village. This is supposed to be a really spiritual place. And I thought, well, looking at the Bible, wonder what it has to say to me. So I looked at it and I thought, I'm just going to open it up and put my finger on the book and see what it has to say. And under my finger was the verse in John, I will not leave you comfortless. Breathtaking. And I started to cry. I don't know why I started to cry, but we've all had those moments, and I call those spiritual soul moments, when there's a connection of some kind and we don't really understand what that's all about. I will not leave you comfortless, the book said. I didn't realize it at the time, but that line, those words were the key, when you think about it, to what sacred scripture is all about. Why people even bother to read it or study it or do anything with it. As I had mentioned, in a couple of weeks, there's Easter. And we'll be telling this wondrous story of Jesus' resurrection. But you know, in all the hoopla around the resurrection, we sometimes forget that these stories, this book, this holy scripture, are our stories. It's a spiritual roadmap, not just about how wonderful Jesus was, but it's also, as we look at it and study it, Jesus telling us how amazing we are, you know, and how amazing we can be if we just practice some of these principles. Scripture says, these things you will do also, and greater things will you do. That's a pretty awesome promise. So there are deeper meanings in these sacred stories. And it's not just enough that Jesus had his resurrection. He left clues for us, steps so that we too could have our own resurrection, our own new life, our own power. It really wasn't about Jesus saying, aren't I grand? Aren't I wonderful? It's like, here's the roadmap. Now take it and run with it. I will not leave you comfortless. So that's kind of what Reverend Mike and I have been talking about over these past several weeks in this Lazarus Blueprint series. That exploring of the deeper meanings of this story of the resurrection of Lazarus. The raising of Lazarus contained in this story has six clues, six steps that we can use to give ourselves new life, to throw off the shackles, to give ourselves new power, to give ourselves healing and inner peace. And isn't that really what we're looking for? That's why people tend to come to church. So the story goes, you know, Lazarus was dead in the tomb, and Jesus, in a loud voice, calls him out. Lazarus, come out. And all of a sudden, Lazarus is reanimated. And the story goes on to say, the dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, his face wrapped in a cloth. And I always... I must have watched too many cartoons in my formative years because I immediately go to The Mummy, you know, the old black and white movie, completely wrapped up. Anyway, so I'm reading the Bible and I'm thinking The Mummy. And in this story of Lazarus, Lazarus comes out and there he is. I mean, he sort of had some mobility because he obviously could shuffle out of the tomb. But he's still kind of bound up. So he's still hampered. He's still not fully active. And Jesus says, unbind him and let him go. He's kind of talking to the crowd out there. So pretty awesome. The impossible has now been made possible. What needed to be healed in Lazarus is now healed. And Lazarus has been restored to life. Yay! End story. He's alive. Well, not quite. There's more to the story than the story. Lazarus is infused with new life. This we know. He kind of staggers out of the tomb. But he's still bound head and foot. You know, he still has a cloth over his head. He can't even see. He's probably just kind of moving to the light. He's alive, but he's not yet free. Still hampered, And so this coming alive, this reanimation process still isn't complete. He's still shrouded in those external wrappings of the past, his old dead state. He can't move freely. And so Jesus commands, unbind and let him go. What's Jesus really saying? What's he really telling us in this story? What he's saying is, get rid of that stuff from the past life that's no longer relevant. Those death wraps, those sepulcher wraps, were no longer needed to this new life, to this new, now alive and reanimated Lazarus. Lazarus isn't fully alive. He cannot accept this new life until those old wrappings are discarded, until he can kind of move freely and see clearly. And this is our story. It has this meaning for us. We need to ask ourselves, what are those old wrappings? What relevance is there in this story for us? It's not a secret. We resist change. We talk about, oh, you want things to change. When it happens, or when we're thrown into it, you know, we really dig in our heels. We want new outcomes. We want new life. You know, we want new identities, but we keep holding on to the old patterns. You know, the old habits, the old behaviors, the old friends, the old circumstances and roles. We've wrapped our own selves tightly with the cloth of the past. It's comfortable, isn't it? You know what to expect. You know what to do. You know, you say this, they say that. I talked about how after my divorce, quite a ways after, I started dating again. And I was in this relationship with this man, and I was doing some of the old routines that I used to do with my ex, and he didn't know his lines, you know? And so I'd do this or I'd say that, and it's like, okay, take a cherry, and nothing. He didn't know. And I became aware of, ooh, you know, I had a role. I had some old lines. I had some old wrappings that this new life now didn't accommodate. Am I the only one? I mean, that's had that problem. Oh, yeah. Change requires so much work. It's more comfortable just to... It would have been much easier if Jerry knew his lines, that I could have just sort of gone along. We're all guilty of repeating certain words and behaviors. What we're doing when we do that, we're dressing ourselves in a particular role. And this role then becomes our identity. And others recognize and support that role that we've made for ourselves. When you think about it. In other words, we're wrapping ourselves tightly with cloth from past thinking and past doing. In our own minds, as well as other people's. As we see ourselves, as we wrap ourselves in our role, that's how other people see us. We become fill in the blank, the sickly one, the cancer patient, the abandoned child, the alcoholic, the troublemaker, the caregiver. Not all these roles are victim roles. And even when we want to change that role, even when we do the work, others still see us in the old wrappings, don't they? If we change, if we move out of those roles that we do and we're accustomed to doing, and other people are accustomed to seeing us in, we change the dynamic. And then other people have to change. Even change for the better is uncomfortable. To those of you who've been in situations where roles change, people start straightening out their lives, And you would think automatically things would get better, and there's just a lot of mayhem that goes on until everybody gets their new roles. And there's going to be that push-pull to restore that old dynamic. We all have our roles, our identities, the competent one, the reliable one. That's your role. Have you ever tried then to kind of back away from not being the reliable one? The screw-up, the space cadet. We go on and on. The different roles. In this process of change, in this resurrection process, first, we have to convince ourselves, know and believe there's a part of us that is more powerful than any circumstance or any challenge around us. And we're more powerful of any role that has either been put on us, because sometimes we don't necessarily put them on, they get put on us, or any role we want to change. It requires work on our part, continual effort, prayer and affirmations when we catch ourselves falling back in the old roles. And then the second part of this equation is we have to convince the others around us, because they're holding on to this old image of us. They have those expectations of how, if they do this, I'll do that. And when we stop doing that, they don't know what to do with this new image in your thought and in your actions. So our job to help them do that is to hang on very tightly to this new way of thinking, these new actions, so we don't get sucked back into that dynamic, that old dynamic. And day by day, it's like lifting weights. You become stronger. This becomes more automatic. And this now is the new you, free of all those wrappings. In closing, none of these six steps that we've been talking about in this Lazarus blueprint is easy. I mean, it takes effort and work on our part. But this last step is so critical. What we have to remember for us, no matter what the situation or the circumstance or the role that's either been put on us or we've had to accept, resurrection is always possible. But if we're wrapped up in the same thoughts and mindsets as before, then we're the same person as before. We are not fully alive to this new us. Our location may change. Our partner may change. Our financial situation may change. But unfortunately, our life will not have changed. Been there, done that? The people who are in a job that is just awful and their bosses are terrible and nobody understands, and then they quit and they get a new job, and funny thing, the boss is awful and the people are terrible. And our life will not have changed because with the same approach as before, with the same wrappings as before, we'll repeat the same outcomes as before. So this week, your assignment is to ask yourself, what's your role? What's your identity? And again, it might be caregiver, it might be competence, it might be reliability, it might be whatever it is. And we need to ask ourselves, is there a role or an identity that no longer serves you, that you might want to put aside? Now is a great time to unwrap those strips of cloth, hampering your movement into a new life, hampering your thinking. Resurrection is around the corner, people.